Well, the first thing was the earthquake. I woke up early in the morning. I was just sort of getting myself awake, and all of a sudden, an earthquake began quite gently at first. And I'm used to experiencing light earthquakes in Samoa. There were just sort of little tiny ones every now and again. So I thought it was going to be one of those, but it wasn't. It grew in magnitude, and pretty soon it was shaking the house very badly, and I started getting worried. As someone who'd been through the California big earthquake a few years ago, it sort of brought back some of those memories. And it went on for a really long time. I don't think I've ever been in such a long earthquake. I could hear people running outside the house, which is what people do here. Most of the houses here are just bungalows, or they're low houses, so you don't really have to worry about high rises and things falling on you from great heights. But even so, it was worrying enough. Then I got myself together and found that there were quite a few people sort of around about who were talking to their families, and a radio bulletin came on and said that there was a tsunami warning. Well, now people here, they've been drilled about tsunamis. They know that they must go to higher ground if they hear a siren. And the sirens went off, the church bells went off, and people started, I understand, moving up to higher ground. I'm not going to say everybody moved that fast, because they tend to sort of go off and nobody kind of bothers about it a little bit here. I've had been in that situation myself, where I went running for the hills and nobody around me did. But in this case, unfortunately, as we later discovered, people didn't get out of the way of it fast enough, tragically. What happened was that, you see, I live at this point on a hill between Apia, the capital of Upolu, which is one of the islands of Samoa, which is to be distinguished from American Samoa. And the place that I'm staying is halfway between Apia and the southern beaches. Now, it's the southern beaches where the tsunami hit. And a very large stretch of the coast, the southern coast, pretty much the whole of the southern coast was hit by this wave that occurred roughly 7 minutes after the earthquake. A lot of people didn't know anything about this. We didn't really get any feedback about the wave. I just sort of kicked into survival mode once the earthquake hit from my Californian experiences. And I know that people start stocking up, so I raced down to the grocery store for some water and supplies. And when I was there, a friend I ran into casually mentioned that that a wave had hit a place called Coconuts Beach Resort, which I know very well. My husband stayed there recently with me when he was visiting, and it's one of those beaches on the southern coast. And so I thought that I would go down there, partly because I've invested in a small dive company that's situated right next to Coconuts, and I was a bit concerned about what was going on there. So I got in my car, and the first thing I saw was a lot of people had been ferried. They were driving up, they were walking up the hill, they were running out of the way of the tsunami, and they were all congregating around the summit of the hill. And I mean, it was kind of a good-natured thing. They were kind of in a good mood, kind of looking forward to seeing the big wave when it came. But they didn't realize the tragedies that had happened down below, because you couldn't see what was happening on the coast. And it wasn't until I got right down on the coast, and I sort of had to talk my way through a police barrier, and I was allowed to do that because I had a business down there. I went down and I parked my car, and I started to walk. And as I curved this bend that leads down to Coconut Beach, on a beach called Maninoa, I was absolutely shocked by the devastation that I saw down there. I saw a huge amount of rubble that had been thrown by a very, very large force, had thrown the Farleys, these beach Farleys, or sort of structures on the beach, had been thrown. They'd been broken up and thrown into large piles. There were cars, sort of shiny cars, otherwise shiny new cars, were sitting on top of these piles of rubble. that had been tossed up there by the wave. There were fridges floating in the water. There were air conditioners. There were gas containers everywhere. Power lines sort of hanging off. It all looked very, very precarious. There was water still lying in places where there wasn't water before. And this beautiful resort was no more. The overwater bungalows where my husband had stayed had been totaled. I mean, there was just no sign of them at all. I walked through, a woman called to me and said, "Were you staying there?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Well, there's a we found a woman's body in the bushes over here, and we don't know who she is. Nobody's come to claim her." And that has been the story. There are a lot of missing people. People have been found, and nobody knows who they are. The resorts, of course, I know of at least five resorts that have been totaled, pretty much. But really, the emphasis must be on the Samoan villages. It's the Samoan villages that where there's been tremendous loss of life, and there weren't many tourists around at this time, really. But there were kids on their way to school. A lot of people are missing and completely unaccounted for. People build their villages very simply. They use wood branches and sort of in many materials made out of natural fibers like coconut and so on. The roofs are thatched, and so people are they're used to the temporary nature of these houses, and they can always be built again. So Samoans, being very unmaterialistic and the lovely people that they are, not caring about their structures, I don't imagine that their property is terribly important to them. But the loss of life, of course, is irreplaceable, and there are many people in mourning. When I was walking around Coconuts, when I got to the dive business that was once there, I saw the two owners, an Englishman, Ian, and his Portuguese wife, was standing there very forlornly, surrounded by a very small group of little pieces of dive equipment they'd managed to salvage. And I looked to my left, and their boat, this 30-foot dive boat, had been tossed above the kitchen of the hotel that was originally next to them. I mean, it just the force of the wave that must have done that is incredible. Then I got a terrible call from somebody who informed me that a dear friend of mine had been killed trying to escape the waves, and she unfortunately did not make it. And so I'm sort of staying up to attend her funeral at 5:30 this in the morning, which is in about 2 hours' time here. But essentially, people are there's tremendous resilience among Samoans. They're really extraordinary people with an incredible culture. The family is very, very strong. Many, many people are homeless. Have been homeless tonight, but it's not the same as being homeless elsewhere, because here there's always extended family. They will have found other villages, and many people just on the streets. We've all been helping out, ferrying people around, and trying to help out, donating blood and so on to the hospitals, which are full and overextended, as you can imagine at this point. My business partner was ferrying people up and down the hill in his truck today, just trying to ease things, since it was hard for the buses to get around. But essentially, I can foresee that I suppose the government here will perhaps ask for some foreign aid, and perhaps that will be forthcoming. And I'm sure that it will be rebuilt in no time. But as I said, the people here have incredible spirits, and I'm sure that they will manage to survive this as they've survived many other things in the past.